Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This week, for our big Thanksgiving weekend episode, we're going to be talking about Horrible Bosses 2, Penguins of Madagascar, and The Babadook, a horror film out of Australia that's kind of flying below a lot of people's radars, but is worth talking about. Let's talk about some news and the trailer park and the box office predictions and, of course, the world-famous DVD roundup. But first, how you can get a hold of me if you want to reach me. You can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And I'm also on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. Let's move on into the news. There's a little bit of trailer news. The first one is, well, the only one really that's sort of like weird news about a trailer is Star Wars The Force Awakens is running in front of films this weekend at various theaters and select theaters. Now, it's been changing all week about which theater has it and which theater doesn't and which theater chain has it. The closest in Ohio is in Cleveland. And I live about 2.5 hours away. I'm not driving 2.5 hours away to go watch a trailer that I'm going to be able to see online, you know, by Monday anyways. It's probably going to be up before Monday, but they're not releasing it in every theater, but I literally know people who are buying tickets to Big Hero 6 who've already seen Big Hero 6, and that's a great movie, but they're buying tickets to Big Hero 6 just to see the Star Wars trailer. It reminds me of when the first trailer for Star Wars The Phantom Menace opened back in 1999 or 1998, whenever the actual first trailer came out. And people went and saw The Siege, watched the trailer and left. They paid full price for a movie, saw The Siege and left. So I'm just going to watch it online. It'll be much easier that way. They were going to drop the Jurassic World trailer later in the weekend, but they dropped it early. So we're going to be talking about that in the trailer park, little tease that's coming up. But the other piece of news is, this is sort of a 1-2 punch. Stephen King's The Stand, that's probably one of his best books. And he wrote it in the 70s. I think it came out in 1978. It was like 800 pages. Then when he became a huge author, they expanded it to like 1,200 pages, what it was originally supposed to be published as. And they made a TV miniseries back in the 90s. They've been tossing around the idea of making The Stand into a movie for a while. They have now decided to make it into 4 movies, and it's going to be directed by Josh Boone. And he's the guy who directed The Fault in Our Stars. I know there's a bit of a disconnect from the guy who directed that movie to directing The Stand, which is an epic story with many, many characters, and it deals with politics and corruption and apocalypse. There's a lot of density to The Stand. It's a great book. I don't like the idea of 4 movies, though. I mean, it's bad enough that they're making trilogies out of movies like The Hobbit, but 4 movies? Do we really need 4 movies? And what if the first one isn't a huge hit? Are they going to make all 4? Are they going to shoot them concurrently the way they did Lord of the Rings so that they don't have to go back and reshoot each year with them, which is kind of what they do with the Harry Potter. They kept doing them every year. So, I don't know. The other thing is Matthew McConaughey is being rumored as playing Randall Flagg in that movie, and he's the bad guy. And actually, that's great, because I think he'd make a great Randall Flagg. If you've read The Stand, you can probably totally see Matthew McConaughey as Randall Flagg. So I think that's a great casting choice. If it happens, I still think Josh Boone is yet to be tested on something like this, compared to like The Fault in Our Stars, which is just a weepy teen romance with some cancer dashed in there. Also, speaking of casting news with bad guys, Christoph Waltz is going to be playing Blofeld in the next Bond movie. And that's a great choice, because pretty much he's been playing Blofeld his entire career anyways. He was basically Blofeld in Inglourious Basterds. He was a different version of Blofeld, but he was ultimately a Blofeld type character. I welcome this. I think he'll be great. I think the other thing, that he brings a certain cheesiness to it. I'm afraid that the Bond movies are losing some of the fun cheesiness. I liked Skyfall. I really did. And I liked Casino Royale. And heck, I even liked Quantum of Solace. But this trend to make things overly serious, I want to see the lightheartedness. I don't necessarily think we need to go back to the Roger Moore days or the Pierce Brosnan days, but a little bit lighter is always nice. And I think that Christoph Waltz brings that to his performance in a John Malkovich sort of way. Another piece of news, The Expendables 4 is in development right now. And because Expendables 3 comes out on DVD this week, Sylvester Stallone was interviewed about the movie, and he basically called it a big miscalculation to go for a PG-13 and focus on the younger players, like Helen freaking Lutz as one of the stars of the Expendables 3. And he's come out and said, yes, Expendables 4, when it happens, it will be R-rated. He's also saying it's going to be a little bit out of the box. He said it's not going to be something as goofy as time travel, but who knows? I mean, maybe aliens or genetic monsters. I don't know. Regardless, I like the idea of going for the R rating for the Expendables. I'm not one of those people who says it has to be R. Like for the crowd they're going for the Expendables, you gotta be R rated. You gotta go back to that R rated 80s action violence that we all know and love. And they did that PG-13 version, not just in Expendables 3, but actually Expendables 2. While that was a lot of fun, that was shot for PG-13. They just added a lot of digital blood, which bothered me then as well. The final piece of news is Wonder Woman, the movie, is getting a female director, not just a director, but a female director, which is cool because Wonder Woman's like the most iconic female superhero out there. How can you make it such a girl power kind of superhero movie and then put a guy behind the film? I like the idea that they're going for a female director. I think that's good. It's Michelle MacLaren. And she's mostly known for TV, but if you want to talk about very male-oriented TV, she's directed episodes of Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones, The Walking Dead. She's not like directing the Golden Girls episodes. All right, with that sound, that means we need to move on into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to talk about is Cinderella, and that opens on March 13th.
You have more kindness in your little finger than most people possess in their whole body.
It was my mother's old dress.
It would be an insult to take you to the palace dressed in these old rags.
You shall not go to the ball.
Excuse me. Why are you crying?
Who are you?
That's better.
My fairy godmother.
I don't know exactly how to feel about this one because it looks like it's going to be a well-made movie. And I kind of give it credit for not trying to give some sort of bizarre spin to it the way they did with Snow White and the Huntsman and Mirror Mirror or Maleficent, where they're saying, oh, let's tell it from the bad guy's point of view. But ultimately, there is a certain been there, done that feel to this. Yeah, they've got animated, computer-generated mice and the coachman and that sort of effects to this. But it's ultimately just a Cinderella story. It's like a large-scale version of a Hallmark movie. And I just almost feel like, is this necessary? Is this, because the whole thing is now to have fairy tales in the movies, but usually there's some sort of spin to them. This is a straight-up adaptation of Cinderella, which could be okay, but maybe I just want to go back and watch the original Disney animated film. The next trailer I want to talk about, I teased about earlier, was Jurassic World. That got its trailer. It was supposed to open in front of the Thanksgiving movies, but it dropped earlier this week. So let's go ahead and squeeze this one into the show. This opens next summer, June 12th.
We have learned more in the past decade from genetics than a century of digging up bones. A whole new frontier has opened up. We have our first genetically modified hybrid.
Just went and made a new dinosaur?
Probably not a good idea.
I love the Jurassic Park movies. A lot of people say their least favorite Jurassic Park is the third one. I disagree. The second one I think is terrible. I think it's a terrible book. It was just Michael Crichton writing for hire and not really having his heart into it. But the third one I had fun with. And this one looks like it might be fun. It doesn't look like it's going to be at the level of the other movies. And it is a certain silliness to the, we genetically created a dinosaur and it escaped. Oh, gosh, I thought that we would be safe. Once you get past the first Jurassic Park, it going disastrously wrong again and again is kind of a silly thing. But it looks like it might be fun. I mean, it's a big tentpole summer release. I will say, and you couldn't see this because it's obviously on the radio, the animation didn't look as strong as it could have. I hope there's improvements on that. I hope that's not the final animation of what we saw. With that, I need to go to a break. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about Horrible Bosses 2 and some suggestions on my favorite turkeys for Turkey Day weekend.
Okay.
Gobble, gobble, it's Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies coming back at you for the Turkey Day long weekend, the Thanksgiving weekend. I hope everyone's being safe out there. I hope everybody's enjoying their holiday weekend with your family, with your friends, stuffing your face, eating till it hurts, passing out while watching football or movies or the program of your choice, going to Black Friday, trampling innocent people to get a huge discount on an overly priced TV. I hope everybody's making the most of this long weekend, which is always very stressful and very busy. With that, if you get a chance to go to the movies, here's one you might want to talk about. The first movie on the list is Horrible Bosses 2. After having their invention stolen from them, Nick, Kurt, and Dale seek revenge by kidnapping the thief's son.
I'll place the initial order of
100,000 units.
100,000 shower buddies!
We have finished order in full, and it is ready to be shipped.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to cancel that order.
Say cancel?
We have our own new product, the Shower Pal.
It's a better name,
too. It is a better name. What were we thinking? Who bets on themselves? We need to find $500,000 to get us our company back.
I got it! Boom!
I'm gonna partner up on this thing.
The kidnapping is off.
No, it's on.
No, it's off.
I was a huge fan of Horrible Bosses. I thought Horrible Bosses, the year it came out, was it 2011? Was probably, if not the funniest movie of the year, one of the funniest movies of that year. Extremely hilarious. I thought Charlie Day was perfect. It was one of the best cast movies ever. Charlie Day was great. Jason Bateman was great. Even Jason Sudeikis, who kind of blows hot or cold for me, I thought he worked in the role. Jennifer Aniston owned her crazy part, and so did Colin Farrell and Kevin Spacey. It was a great movie. Very, very funny movie. Whenever you make a sequel to something like this, there are certain obstacles you have to overcome. One of them being, A, to make it as funny as the original. And much in the same tone as the original. I mean, if it's a raunchy comedy, keep it a raunchy comedy. Don't try and make it a family movie. We talked about that with The Expendables. Don't change the nature of the series by changing the sequel. They do that in this movie. I mean, it's still a raunchy, mean-spirited, very, very funny at times comedy. It's got a lot of humor that is going to make some people uncomfortable. And it's got a lot of politically incorrect humor. But I don't think they overdo it. I don't think they're obnoxious about it. It's not the comedic equivalent of just flipping somebody off. I think it's taking something that's very unnerving to talk about and twists it around with dealing with sex and crime and everything that's involved with that. I also think they did a relatively decent job keeping the people who were in the first one who didn't die, keeping those characters in this one and actually making it seem somewhat organic. It is a bit forced to get Jennifer Aniston's character in there, but I think it works as well as it can. I mean, in terms of a sequel, the original Horrible Bosses, that was a one-off movie. They were going to do it, and that was it. And it was such a hit that they said, well, now we got to make a new one. And I think it's funny. I think it has some good parts, and some parts are forced. Some parts are not terribly funny. But overall, it's a pretty evenly spaced and an evenly run version of the first movie. And I think they continue the characters fine. They bring in Christoph Waltz as the bad guy and Chris Pine as his son. Both of them do a great job, kind of playing similar to what they've played before, but also slightly different than what they're most famous for. I mean, Chris Pine's most famous for Captain Kirk in Star Trek. And Christoph Waltz is most famous for playing super villainous bad guys in movies like Inglourious Basterds. If you liked Horrible Bosses, the first one, you should be able to find something to like in this movie. Oh, and Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx, and I kind of commend them on finding a way to not just put his character back in, but make his character make more, as much sense as it could in this movie. It plays to the comedy. It doesn't get overly meta, which is also a danger in movies like this, that they try and turn the joke in on themselves. Horrible Bosses 2 is perfectly fun. It's not the greatest comedy of the year. It's not as funny as the first one, but it's funny enough. And compared to the fact that you've got Dumb and Dumber 2 out there, it's way better than that. And hopefully it will give that film a run for its money this weekend. So I'm going to say Horrible Bosses 2 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Instead of doing some more movie reviews this week, I do want to give a little bit of a nod to Thanksgiving and Turkey Day. Of course, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and that's when Mystery Science Theater was a huge thing, especially for college students. And I was a college student when it was kind of in its heyday. Mystery Science Theater, if you're not familiar with it, it was this, or it started out as a UHF station show that then moved to cable back when the Comedy Central, it wasn't even Comedy Central. It was when it was the Comedy Channel. It was in its infancy. And then it became this sort of tentpole for Comedy Central. And it was a show where it was this guy who'd been shot up into space, and he had these two mad scientists who would send him cheesy movies every week, and he'd watch them with his two robots that he built from spare parts on his ship, and they would just watch the movie, and they had a little silhouette of them, and they'd make fun of the movies. And it was hilarious because people like me grew up making fun of cheesy movies on the late night, Friday night movies, and a bad movie, there's a whole range of bad movies. There are movies that are just plain bad, and then there are movies that are so bad they're good, and then there's movies that are still bad, but if you have a little fun with them, they can be wildly entertaining. Few shows impacted me as much as Mystery Science Theater did. And what they started doing back in the 90s was they had a thing called Turkey Day, where they would show 15 of their movies on like Wednesday night and then throughout the day Thursday. It was a lot of fun, and it became something very special to me. And the show finally disappeared off of Comedy Central, and it was picked up by the Sci-Fi Channel. But Turkey Day kind of fell apart, and there's been a resurgence. Turkey Day has kind of come back. It's come back online, and they're doing it this weekend, where Joel Hodgson's, the guy who originally started Mystery Science Theater, is introducing some of their classic episodes, and they're streaming them online. I show these movies to my kids over Turkey Day. We watch a bunch of these movies, and the various offshoots like Riff Tracks and Cinematic Titanic and The Film Crew, that the future projects of the people involved in the shows were. I'm just going to tell you some of my favorite bad movies that are worth watching if you can get your hands on them this weekend. Top of the list, of course, is The Room. This is a movie directed by a guy named Tommy Wiseau, also starring him, and allegedly he had used mob money to finance it. And it's just a basic kitchen sink soap opera drama. It's so ineptly put together. It's terrible. But it is amazingly terrible. The acting and the line deliveries are jaw-dropping. The sudden, relatively graphic sort of Showtime After Dark sex scenes are kind of shocking. The nonsensical actions of some of the people. If you've never seen The Room, it's one of these movies that is getting play in theaters at a midnight movie where you can go and you can make fun of it live. Another one, Troll 2. Probably one of the most classic bad movies. It was the subject of the documentary Best Worst Movie. I loved Troll 2 before it was cool to love Troll 2. I remember watching it on VHS back in the 90s, shortly after it was released. Has nothing to do with trolls. It was only named that to tie it loosely to the movie Troll by Full Moon Pictures. It's about people going to a town called Neelbog and encountering goblins. It has become a classic in bad films. If you've never seen Troll 2, get your drink on, get your snack on, watch that movie with a bunch of friends. Superman 4, The Quest for Peace is another one. This is the movie that killed the Superman franchise. It's the worst Superman movie ever, and it's so corny and so cheesy and so poorly written. Then, of course, there's some Mystery Science Theater 3000 episodes. These are movies that would have never gotten notice outside of the show, but other ones that are worth watching. Stuff like Manos, The Hands of Fate, Teenage Strangler, Time of the Apes, and The Side Hackers. Those are some of my favorites out there. Those are my turkey suggestions. If you still have time to check those out on your various platforms or rentals. But right now I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Penguins of Madagascar and The Babadook. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, coming back at you, talking about the movies and reviewing the films that are new this week that you can enjoy on this Thanksgiving Day, Turkey Day weekend. And before we just launch into Christmas, because, boy, when Christmas hits the ground, it hits the ground fast, and it's a whirlwind. At least my whole life is a whirlwind from October through January, because October is Halloween and it's horror movie month, and I'm watching horror movies. I'm going to horror movie marathons. I'm doing horror movie marathons, and it's a big deal. And of course I got kids, so we got trick or treat and everything. And then you hit November and I'm getting set for the holiday movies, and it starts up award season. And then when Christmas time hits, I've got screeners out my ear. I've got to watch all these movies before I can nominate and vote on the various awards that I vote on. And then, of course, you got the whole Christmas holiday coming at you. And then finally in January, there's a chance for me to breathe. So right now I'm getting ready to go completely bonkers. But before I do that, let's talk about the penguins of Madagascar. The penguins from the Madagascar films live a double life as secret agents trying to stop a villainous octopus from seeking revenge on their species.
What the heck is going on?
Remain calm, penguins. You are now under the protection of the North Wind.
We don't even know who the heck you are.
You got a soggy madman to stop.
I give the orders around here.
You were supposed to handcuff them.
But they don't have hands. They just have flippers. And I have flippers. So it's flipping useless.
After them!
All right, boys. It's just like Cuba.
Venice. Rio de Janeiro. Dusseldorf.
We've arrived in the center of Dublin, Ireland.
We gotta blend in. Riverdance.
Funny about this is the responses and the reactions that I've been seeing from other critics about this movie reminds me of how they're responding to Horrible Bosses 2. There's a lot of people who aren't liking that movie. Whereas I'm not expecting it to be perfect. I'm expecting just a fun movie. And I thought the Madagascar movies have gone up and down. I mean, I thought the first one was pretty cute. The second one was kind of lame. The third one was kind of fun. But I love the penguins. The penguins are one of my favorite parts of it. And I'm a big fan of taking a character I love and giving them their own movie, but then not trying to make it the beginning and the end of animated films. We saw that happen with the Minions. They're making a Minions movie, and I think that might be a lot of fun. Doggone it. That just looks like it's a cool movie. I'd love to see him do a scrap movie with the Ice Age. I don't care about the woolly mammoth and the sloth. And, well, the sloth is funny, but the saber-tooth cat. I care about the little saber-tooth rat or whatever squirrel that thing is that has the acorn. I love that. What the Penguins of Madagascar does is it takes these characters that are very funny and it gives them an absurd movie. It's not trying to change the world. It's not trying to teach you a message. It's just trying to be fun. In a lot of ways, it reminds me of movies like Cars 2, which people just railed upon because they said, oh, it was stupid. I think there's a lot of rage against Larry the Cable Guy to begin with on that. But when it comes to Cars 2, what I liked about it, it was just a silly little spy movie. It was kind of a spy spoof. And it was a lot of fun. And I remember when Bolt came out. Oh gosh, how many years ago that? 5 years ago or so? The one with the dog that was the actor dog that was a super dog, but he was really just a dog as an actor. The first 5 minutes of Bolt were amazing because it was him being a super spy dog. And then they cut and then they come out and then they show that they're actors. And I remember saying, I'd watch an entire movie of that. I'd watch an entire movie of Bolt as a super dog, not about Bolt trying to learn lessons. That's fine and all, but I wanted to see the spy movie. And that's kind of what you get with Penguins of Madagascar. It's them being buffoon spies. It's Austin Powers with penguins. That's really all it needs to be. And that's okay. It's just meant to make you laugh. It's not trying, because one of the problems with the Madagascar sequels is they kept trying to have something for everybody, and there's loads of characters in those movies, and everybody's got to have a story arc, and it gets very crowded, and it gets very overwritten, and you got so many big names in it, and yeah, you got some big names in Penguins of Madagascar. Benedict Cumberbatch plays one of the characters. He plays the wolf that's part of the North Wind, the spy operation that's helping him. You've got John Malkovich playing the evil octopus villain, and he's fantastic in it. I mean, it's one of the best voice casting I've seen, or heard, rather. But the Penguins of Madagascar, they're the stars. And it has its sort of heartfelt moments, but in the end, it's just meant to be fun and silly. And that's what I liked about it. I took my son, who's 11, and he had a blast. It's just a fun movie. It has a lot of action, has a lot of goofiness, has a lot of sass to it. And it lives up to exactly what I expected. So I'm going to say that the Penguins of Madagascar kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is a smaller movie released by IFC Midnight. It is The Babadook. It's an Australian film that I believe was funded by Kickstarter. So it's a very small grassroots film. The story is a widowed single mother struggles to take care of her emotionally challenged son while they both fear a malevolent entity is stalking them.
If it's in a word or it's in a look, you can't get rid of the Babadook. A rumbling sound, then three sharp knocks.
Babadook, duck, duck.
That's when you'll know he's around. You'll see him if you look. But when to report someone stalking me and my child.
It isn't real. It isn't real. It isn't real.
Baba.
I had been hearing buzz about the Babadook for a while. I remember seeing press releases about it. I'm seeing some early reviews of it. And what's interesting is when it came time for award season, I started to get information from the publicists and the awards offices from IFC pushing this movie in award season, which is rare. You don't normally see a company pushing a horror movie because horror movies don't tend to do well in award season unless it's specifically for a, unless it's specifically for a specific award. I'm a member of the BFCA. We do give a sci-fi horror award. And I think that's what they're going for with this. I think I think it has a chance. The Babadook is a brilliantly made thriller. It digs deep in the psychology and it examines very common issues of what it's like to be a parent. And in the film, the woman, she had been in a car accident the night she gave birth and the father of her child had gotten killed in there. So the kid never knew his father. So she's taking care of him. The kid's like in second grade. And he's got some emotional issues. He's a bit weird and the kids don't like him. And it's her struggling to maintain her own sanity because she's trying to work and she's trying to make a living, but she's also trying to raise her kid. And she doesn't have a partner with her to help her out, to balance it out. And it's her coming unglued. What happens is they get this book that is delivered and it's this creepy picture book, pull-up book called The Babadook. And it's about this creature called the Babadook, and it's a terrifying book. It's not at all a children's book. It's a terrifying book about this Babadook's going to haunt you and going to devour you and live inside you. The scene where they get the book and they open it up and start reading it, that's when it hooked me. Because at first I was just like, oh, I've seen these movies about, you know, the mother trying to take care of her kid and the kid's disturbed, whatever. I've seen that before. And it's when they start reading this book, I'm just like, this is creepy. This is really well done. It has some fantastic imagery. And of course, she starts hallucinating, seeing the Babadook around and, you know, it knocks and it has its voice, the Babadook coming after you. At times you don't know. And this is where real good horror, this is a fine line to walk with horror movies, but the Babadook does that. A fine line between believing that there is in fact some supernatural entity haunting them. Or is she just going mad? Is she suffering from sleep deprivation? Is she suffering from guilt and grief because she still hasn't gotten over the fact that her, I don't think it was her husband, but her child's father was killed. How hard is that for a person to handle? And because she's being haunted and there's nightmares and her kid's having nightmares, she's losing her mind. And you don't know whether this is true or not. And it really walks that fine line, which is very difficult because it's very easy to make it, oh, are they really haunted? No, they're not. Scooby-Doo, Andy, let's rip the mask off of Old Man Smithers. They never really do that. There is an ambiguity there. And it's a good ambiguity. I'm not talking like a BS Christopher Nolan Inception ambiguity. I'm talking about an honest-to-God ambiguity that almost David Lynch, in a way. Brilliantly directed, brilliantly shot. The Babadook is one of the better horror movies, new horror movies I've seen this year. So I'm going to give The Babadook a rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
All right. With that, I need to go to a break. When I come back, we're going to be talking about the box office and the world famous DVD roundup. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys in the Movies. Rolling into the final segment, we're going to finish things up by talking about The Hunger Games and some of the implications of its box office and what happened. And we're also going to be doing the world-famous DVD roundup. So there's still plenty of things to talk about before we send you on your merry way this weekend and enjoy stuffing your face with pumpkin pie and turkey and passing out and opening your belt and just laying on the couch and the stuff that makes me happy and thrilled, that makes me just love being alive. So let's talk box office first. This is interesting because I remember saying last week, I was guessing $125 million for Mockingjay Part 1. And the conventional wisdom was, a lot of people were saying, it's not going to hit that $150 million that the other two movies did. Just for refresher, the first one, The Hunger Games, made $152 million in March when it came out, which is massive. Catching Fire, they were expecting north of $160 million. It still made $158 million this time last year. And they said, well, Mockingjay, it may not make that, but it's going to make it in the 140s. I saw that's the what I saw people doing. And then the numbers came in, and the overnights on Thursday came in, and it was softer. It was like 17 million, whereas the first Hunger Game was like 19 million, and Catching Fire was like 26 or something like that. That was the Thursday night previews. And the first Hunger Game, for the $19 million or so it made, it was only at midnight. They didn't have these 8 o'clock previews yet. It was early 2012. That wasn't standard. Now they opened Mockingjay at like 7 or 8 in a lot of markets, and they had multiple showings before midnight and then after midnight. And it only made 17, which is not, I mean, there's nothing to sneeze at. That's a good amount to make for any movie, really. But what that told me is that there wasn't the massive demand that there was for the other Hunger Games movies. Then the numbers came out for Friday. And it was in the 50s, like 55 million. And suddenly people kind of put on the brakes and like, whoa, that number is not even going to come close to 150 million. Oh, it should still do okay. It should still do 130, 140 million. It should be fine. But they kept revising numbers down throughout the weekend. When all was said and done, The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 1 made just under 122 million, which, for the record, is the highest grossing opening weekend of 2014. The closest to it was Transformers, which claims it made $100 million. I still don't think it made $100 million. I think they just said that so they could have that number. And other movies like Godzilla was in the 90s and Guardians of the Galaxy was in the 90s. So we had a lot of these opening weekends with pretty solid numbers, but nothing really arguably cracking 100 million. So 122 million is still really good for any movie in 2014. It tops the list, but it might be a disappointment. I'm going to talk about that in a minute, but let's just talk about my predictions for this week because nothing else was really up against it. Big Hero 6 came in second, and Interstellar. I think it's funny that Big Hero 6 is outdistancing Interstellar as a movie, and part of it's because it's a great movie, and Interstellar has its problems. We've gone into those ad nauseum the last couple weeks. And that's it. I mean, there's really no other movie that was doing anything noticeable. I mean, there was a huge dip. I mean, Big Hero 6 made $20 million last weekend, which is great for its third week of release. It's at well over $140 million by now. This week, Mockingjay is going to win. No, there's no doubt about it. I do not think Horrible Bosses doesn't have a chance at beating Mockingjay. Not even at the second weekend, because Horrible Bosses, I think it's going to take a dip from the last movie just because it feels like a forced sequel, even though I thought it was funny. And you already had your surprising turn. But even like Dumb and Dumber, it made in what, the 30s? 30-some million for its opening weekend, so it wouldn't even come close to what I think Mockingjay is going to make. Penguins of Madagascar might give it a run for its money, but this isn't a Shrek movie. This isn't a Madagascar movie. It's a spinoff, so it's going to come close. It's still going to do well. It'll probably be well into the 40s. This is another thing in terms of the box office. You're looking at the fact that everything opened on Wednesday, so you burn off demand Wednesday and Thursday, and then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday tends to be lower, so the opening weekend numbers are a little skewed. For the 5 days, it's going to be big. I think that Mockingjay is only going to make $50 million for the three-day weekend. It'll probably make $70 million for the full Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But it just all depends on how front-loaded it is. They'd like to point out that Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 took a dip, and it did, but didn't take this big of a dip. Twilight did, but the thing is, the other two Twilight sequels that preceded it were already just front-loaded fan favorites. The Hunger Games has this unique ability that it went outside of the fan base. It went to the mainstream, and I think it lost some of the mainstream with this splitting up of the two movies, because there's really nothing, there's really arguably not a whole lot that happens in this film. It's an unnecessary movie. And I don't think it's going to top 300. It's not going to come nowhere close. They're already saying, they're still saying, oh, it should top between 350 and 400 million domestically. I don't think Mockingjay is not even to top 300 million. I don't think it's going to get there. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about a little bit more about the box office. a lot of people are saying, hey, look, you know, a movie making $125 million on any weekend is phenomenal. And it's, there's only a handful of them that have done that. And that's true. But in this marketplace, the way movies are judged is not by how well they do. It's by their expectations. It's like going out on a date. You may go on a date and think it's going to be a bummer date and you actually have a really good time. And it's probably one of the best dates of your life because you had such low expectations. But if you're all worked up for a date and you go out with the prom queen and you find out she's kind of a priss and you find out that she's not very nice, and even if you end up in bed with her, she's not very good in the sack, it could be a big disappointment. Mockingjay is a disappointment. Absolutely it is. And it shows by the stock price of Lionsgate has dipped. And the only thing that is keeping them from declaring this a full-blown disappointment is it's doing better overseas. But I don't necessarily think it's a better movie. I think it's just, it's emerging markets overseas. That's what's driving this. And that's what's driving other movies like Transformers 4, which kind of was a huge disappointment in the US, but it's a huge hit overseas. So Mockingjay is a disappointment. Will it end up being profitable? Absolutely. The movie cost $125 million to make. It's basically made that back already between its domestic and foreign gross in the first week. I wouldn't start having a bake sale for Lionsgate to cover their Mockingjay losses. Now, will this harm Mockingjay Part 2? A little bit. It's not going to be the highest grossing film of the franchise. I think there's going to be some bad blood and there's going to be some grumpiness from people who still, it's going to be leave a bad taste in their mouth that they split this in the movies just to get you to pay twice. And I think there's a lot of people that have been turned off from the franchise because they don't see it necessary to go see. Whereas there was a need to see the other movies. I don't think there is. Maybe it'll be marketed better. I don't know. We'll see next year. But ultimately, the box office being low, the 20% drop from the other two films, which is significant. That's huge. And it's all about expectations in this industry. Now, a lot of people are saying, well, there was no IMAX because all that was taken up by Interstellar. Some people are saying, oh, it's a threequel. Threequels always do poorly. That's not true. And some people saying, well, there's no Hunger Games going on in it. And that's mildly true. And so there's not much action, but that's more a result of the next point, which is absolutely and totally the reason it did it, was splitting the book up. Making it two movies reduced the actual honest to God action that's happening in this movie. It shortened the story. It looked greedy. It looked like a cash grab and it felt unnecessary. And it made this a non-event. It's going to be between 250 to 300 million domestic close, which is miserable for a Hunger Games movie. It's great for most movies, but for a Hunger Games movie, a movie that out of the gate made 152 million its opening weekend in March with nothing built before it. Yes, it's a dip. Now, where this is really going to be felt, not in Mockingjay Part 2, it's going to be felt in Divergent, because Divergent is the series that Lionsgate has tried to continue the Hunger Games hype with. The problem is Divergent didn't do as well as the first Hunger Games. It made in its entire run about what Hunger Games made its opening weekend. And Insurgent, and arguably I've heard people say Divergent is the best of the three books. And then they split the third book of that series into two. They've already made that decision. I think people are going to be tired of that trick and they're just going to stay home. That's where you're really going to see it. So in 2 years, when the first Insurgent third parter comes out, you're really going to see it take it on the chin. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD roundup. Not a huge week for DVDs. I mean, I guess this is getting ready and getting everybody started for Black Friday and Cyber Monday. You've got The Giver, which was with the Jeff Bridges, a young adult dystopian book that kind of started it all. And it feels derivative, but it's not, because it actually came up with some of the stuff first. What If is the story with Daniel Radcliffe and Zoe Kazan as people who are friends, but then want to be romantic. The November Man with Pierce Brosnan. If you want to just see Pierce Brosnan back in the spy game, that's the reason to see this movie. The Expendables 3, we actually talked about that. It'll be an unrated, bloodier cut. Mystery Science Theater 3000, the Turkey Day collection. You can now own Jungle Goddess, The Painted Hills, The Screaming Skull, and Squirm all in one collection from Shout Factory. And finally, the stinker of the week is A Madea Christmas. I had to deal with this last year. It is a terrible movie, made my top 10 worst of the year from last year, and it's back on DVD and Blu-ray. Dear God, help us all. I need to go. It is my time to get out of here. Next week, we're going to be talking about The Pyramid and Foxcatcher. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.